Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. For the better part of a century, one Wisconsin family amassed a collection of fashion and other artifacts whose cultural legacy gives us a glimpse of a particular strata of American society that doesn't normally get the spotlight.
All summer, the Museum of Wisconsin Art has showcased the clothes of six generations of the Roddes family, who lived an upper-middle-class life in Marshfield. Jane Bradbury has been the driving force behind cataloging and preserving her family's collection of not only clothing, but of letters and other objects. She now lives in London, but she was back in Wisconsin in August to give some talks about the Wisconsin side of her family. I met her at the museum to learn more.
Augusta Roddes, in whose house all these clothes were found, was my aunt, and she was almost like a second mother to me. So her house in Marshfield, Wisconsin was the homestead, and although I was born and raised in Boston, I used to go there every year, at least once a year, spend a lot of time there, and that house really was my roots. And as I lost my own mother quite young, she was like a substitute mother for me.
Now, when you came here to visit, did you know these clothes existed when you were a girl? Had you seen them? Were you one of those girls that went into the attic and, like, tried on Grandma's clothes?
Well, I would have loved to, but when I was a little girl playing up on that top floor, the walk-in closet that they called the attic was locked most of the time. However, when I was 19, I will never forget when she brought me up there, took down a large brown box, and took out this black dress that was bought by my namesake, Jane Prindle Gammon, in Paris in 1880. And she gave it to me to try on. I could actually get into that. I could fasten up those whalebones. And suddenly I felt transformed. And I felt connected to her and also to her niece, who I'd seen photographs posing in this dress. So suddenly I was connected with these people. And I felt I could almost hear carriages, you know. It was just an incredible experience. And I felt like a different person myself. So I really date my interest in historic dress to that moment, trying on that dress.
Now, did you know all of these other clothes were up there, or
no,
did you?
No, I didn't. I'd seen some of them. So really, I didn't. She didn't take me up in the attic very much after that. And it was really almost 40 years later, and 2010, when she was getting quite old, and we started having to look and see what was in the house. So I started looking through and trying to sort things out a little bit and see what was there. So there were men's clothes, women's, children's, all different dates. And I couldn't undo all the trunks, but I had a peek, and I was amazed. All the hats and the hat boxes made me think about what was life like for women when they had to put all these outfits together with hats and gloves.
So many layers.
And the layers. And I remember being up there late one night, and I got a glimpse of some black and some fur, and I looked around, and on the back of the door was a full-length black velvet evening coat lined with white ermine fur. And I thought to myself, oh, hello, is this what women are wearing in a small town, Wisconsin? So it was incredible. I knew there was a lot of history here. And I also rummaged around and found other things, like a playbill from Broadway in 1916. I dated it because of a car that was being advertised. So I knew there was a lot of stuff. I didn't know the extent. And so that's when I started to think, this really has to be investigated. There's a lot of fashion history here, but there's a lot of social history.
Was your aunt able to tell you anything at that point, or had she gotten too old to be able to talk?
She was quite old, but I remember taking this dress by Gladys Parker. So she couldn't get up the stairs anymore, but I would take this down carefully, and other dresses, I say, what do you remember about this? And she said, ah, yes, that was my favorite dance dress in college. She went to Northwestern University in Chicago, so she remembered this quite well. And she was interested. I found in letters she tried to find out about the designer, as you know, much later in 1950. She wrote somebody in New York, and they said, oh, no, never heard of her. Well, of course, she was actually very important at the time, but it's only through this label and the research that Edward and I did that now she's known about again.
Now, when did you and Edward meet and start working on this kind of thing?
So as I said, in 2010, I had a feeling that there was something really serious here that needed to be investigated. It probably was worthy of being in a museum or becoming a book. So I thought, what is I'm going to do here? But I had saved many of her letters going back for many years to me, beautiful typewritten letters with family stories and everything. And in it, she describes some visits from Edward. And so she had his full name and his middle initial. So where did I go? Google, and I found him. So I communicated with him, and then when she died in early 2011, I invited him to come out, and that's when we started together to go through it one by one. And I expected there to be gaps. I was amazed that there were really quite few gaps. We had some things from the 1800s, and then from 1900 on, we found examples from every single decade of the 20th century.
Why do you think they wanted to save it? I mean, obviously no one was wearing it at the time. It was behind that locked door in the attic floor. What do you think they were holding on to it for?
It's a combination of things. First of all, they were very devoted to family. And so these were keepsakes. They brought back memories of past loved ones. But they also brought back memories for my aunt, like this prom dress here. She was the junior prom queen in 1932. It was the depths of the Depression. She got a new dress. She knew it was absolutely in fashion. She knew she looked fantastic. She remembered even how much it cost, 1995. And so this must have brought back amazing memories for her. So it was personal memories, memories of her family, and then also they were very patriotic and they loved history, particularly American history. So she once gave me a 1920s coat of my grandmother's. And she said, well, you can wear it once in a while, but be careful with it because, you know, these things get more and more interesting every year. She was just interested in everything, and she could just see, oh, isn't that incredible that they wore that when? And she wanted to show these things to other people. So she would have, ladies' parties. She had different women's groups. They would get together. They would wear some of these things then, and they would admire the workmanship and the lace of what was being done at the turn of the century and later. So sometimes they actually did have kind of fashion shows.
I was wondering if they'd actually put them on later.
Yeah. Somebody in Marshfield contacted me after I'd started the project and said, we found a fashion show, they called it a style show, done in 1988 for the DAR. And my aunt was the narrator wearing a dress from 1856 that she could actually get into. And a few of the dresses of her family were shown then, and other women brought their dresses too. The Broadduses were not the only people. In fact, I have a feeling that whether it's Marshfield or Wisconsin, there's much more saving than you'd expect. So this dress, we found out from that video, she said, well, I wore this dress in college.
This is the one with a lovely asymmetrical.
Yes, this is the one on the cover of the book. So she wore this at college, a bit far from blue jeans and a sweatshirt, I think. And it was also bias cut, like the prom dress. Mm-hmm. And she said, if you could wear a bias cut dress, you were it. And she was it. I mean, she did have a beautiful figure, as you can gather. But what's so interesting about this, she didn't say that in this style show, but we have different evidence that we think this was made by her mother. And the thing about this collection is that because we had 10,000 letters in the house, 2,000 photographs, an incredible amount of artifacts, we could do some sleuthing and kind of figure out things. So there was a letter from this period from her mother to her when she was at college saying, well, I've gone through McCall's pattern books and I found some of these numbers. I want you to look at them. If you want me to make any of them for you when you come home from vacation, I will. So we know that she was sewing during the Depression, certainly. We also found a cutting from a Chicago Sunday paper. Great big cutting in color, and it was the French styles of 1934. And there was a coat with a collar just like this, made by Jean Patou, couturier in Paris. And they'd saved that very carefully. Why, we have to ask. Also, in my grandmother's room, I found a sewing book from 1931, and it was modern dressmaking, how to achieve French chic and smartness in dress. And it said, if you want to have beautiful clothes, you've got to make them yourself. You have to sew for style. And so all those things made us wonder. And then finally, it was a mistake. You see these little button loops here?
Yes.
They're supposed to go away from you, but they go towards you. And that's a mistake. No manufacturer would have done that. But maybe a woman sewing at home with children running around could have done that.
And so, just not noticed until it was too late.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they are the wrong way. So we don't know for sure. And it's possible that my aunt wouldn't have advertised that her mother was sewing because, you know, her mother was quite a matriarch of the town. And certainly in the Depression, she wouldn't have told people she was sewing because that might have been destabilizing for them because about 500 families were depending on the family business, the Rodas family business, for their own livelihoods. And so if they thought she was too much of a pinch to be sewing, that might have worried them. So, you know, maybe they just wanted to keep that quiet.
To themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. The idea that they had to economize as well might have been, as you said, destabilizing. Exactly.
So maybe they didn't want to advertise the fact. But she was known for her embroidery and things. But as I say, letters do prove that she was definitely sewing. And even in World War II, there's a letter saying, oh, I'm having trouble with the dress. So she was still sewing a little bit then, too.
Of all of the garments that are here in this exhibition, is there one particular one that you keep getting drawn to?
Well, I do love the prom dress very much, but this blue dress, which is also possibly by Catherine, Edward found a McCall's pattern very similar. I think this is fabulous. If I had to choose one dress that I would like, it's this one. And in fact, Edward has made a pattern for this. So one of my dreams is to actually produce it so I could actually sell a pattern because I think you could wear this today. The drapes are very Hollywood. We've seen pictures of Hollywood stars then wearing dresses with these long drapes. So it is very glamorous.
Is this the one that's made of three pieces of fabric or two pieces of fabric?
Yes. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just artfully draped.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
And like one seam or
something like that, yes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful dress. And the color is gorgeous, too.
And the fact that she could, you know, choose just the right fabric, because this is a satin crepe and it has a lot of weight. So these aren't going to flap around. They're going to just hang beautifully. And by the way, we found a letter from 1941, and my aunt brought this to New Orleans, hoping to wear it to a Mardi Gras ball. And her aunt did not allow her to wear it. No, that wasn't appropriate, and she had to wear something else. And she writes in her diary, oh, I'm just so mad I have to wear this dress when I could look so basically gorgeous in my blue satin crepe. And she's obviously referring to this one. I studied this a little bit and talked to people from New Orleans, and I think it's because unmarried women then were not expected to show their bare shoulders. That wasn't quite right, and it was very kind of glamorous, and it just wasn't quite appropriate, at least not according to her aunt, so she couldn't wear this gorgeous dress.
It's interesting because, of course, the neckline is high because of the way the draping works. So you don't have the décolletage.
But most of her shoulder would have been showing.
And her arms. Yeah.
And her arms, yes.
Well, all of this has been put together in a book, and I understand, just found out today, that you've won an award for the book.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Amazingly. Yes. A few months ago, we were at the Costume Society of America conference in Maine, and they awarded us the Milia Davenport Publication Award, which is given to what they consider to be the finest dress history book of 2017. So it's a great, great honor. We can take credit, but I think a lot of the credit goes to all the women in my family who saved all these things. It was quite a string of women who were saving it and recognizing that they told something about the past, and all the artifacts as well, and all the letters. It was a very unusual project, and so I think they recognized that. And
in our era of everyone wanting to be minimal, and you know, the idea of just clearing out and having only one or two things, what we would have lost if they had thought that way.
Absolutely. In fact, I found something that my aunt wrote, and she said, I can't throw away a letter because to me it's like throwing away a part of a person. Well, that's why there were 10,000 letters in this house, but that's, I think, how she felt a little bit about the clothes as well. They represented people, her own life and people she loved, and they represented American history.
Well, Jane, I want to thank you so much for taking
time.
Thank
you, Bonnie. Thank you very much indeed.
Jane Bradbury is the niece of the late Augusta Roddice of Marshfield, Wisconsin, and the curator of her family's cultural legacy. The Roddice collection is on view for another week at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend, and you can learn more at wuwm.com.